tell you what, you can catch it on replay if you haven't. You're going to want to see this week's edition on Comcast Sportsnet of Talking Ducks, channel 737 on your Xfinity system. Visit CSNNW.com. Follow on Twitter. Use the handle at Aaron J. Fentress. Mr. Fentress, how you doing?
What is up?
Well, I didn't get a chance to talk to you last week. I hope and you and your family had a wonderful holiday. I would assume so.
I'm still full, bro.
Wow, a week. You must have done some damage.
Dude, it was bad.
I don't think this is one of those cases where we need to be subtle. Mark Helfrich was dismissed. I've been asking everybody who comes on, first and foremost, you saw the Civil War, you saw the Sunday press conference, you did the Monday show, you actually broke the news about 7 o'clock Tuesday. Beyond right, wrong, and different how it was handled, we'll get to all that. How would you gauge your level of surprise that Oregon actually went ahead and dismissed their head football coach?
Oh, man. I struggle with this question because I clearly recognize, I've said this all season, that my sensibilities cloud my ability to judge other people by their sensibilities, if that makes any sense. So if ever, to me, there was a coaching staff that deserved a mulligan, it would be this one. And I just, you know, 2 years after going to the national championship game, first bad season in losing season in 12 years. I just never believed that they were really going to fire him. And then when Helfrich didn't get the word he was fired Sunday, and the coaching staff went out recruiting, I went to like 75% sure that they were going to get kept. And I talked to some sources who were saying that all the reports that it was a done deal were BS. It wasn't a done deal, that they were going to meet, and in that meeting, Helfrich was going to have a chance to you know, state his case, and then you find out that A, he's fired, and B, that Mullins at least knew he was going to fire him before they met. I've heard from sources that this decision might have been done after Colorado, after Washington, somewhere in between, but that it was pretty much known for a long time that this was what was going to happen. I'm still a little surprised. You know, I thought they deserved 1 year to fix it, and they didn't fix it, then hey, by all means, you know. But, I'm still a little shocked.
So somebody asked me a question, and I was like, I think at this point it's all speculation. Do you think if Oregon had gone out and beaten OSU, like, pretty good and dominated the game on Saturday, do you think there's any chance that would have made a difference?
You know, it's so hard to say because ever since the Washington game, when I think it was that week that Mullins went on the Campus Insider and really didn't say anything, and everyone knew right then and there that Helfrich was on the proverbial hot seat. I was like, oh, yeah, he's on a hot seat. Every week from then on, it was like every time they lost, he's done. Every time they won, oh, maybe he's okay. And then they lost, he's done. And so it's just this roller coaster of emotion for each game in terms of what people thought was going to happen. And so I would hope, though, that's such a big picture move like this with so many different variables involved that it didn't come down to one game. I mean, to me, that would be even more ridiculous than what I think it already is pretty ridiculous, that you would base it on one game at the end of the season. Okay, if we win the Civil War, we're safe. If we don't, we're out. Because to me, there's so many. Because they were winning in the third quarter, and the rain and wind came, which neutralized the passing game, and so they couldn't, you know, answer because they were one-dimensional at that point, and that definitely hurt them clearly. And so, are you really going to base it on that? Like, okay, you weren't able to hold a lead in the rain, therefore, I just don't believe that was the case. But then again, everything I haven't believed to be the case has turned out to be the case.
So right.
But like I said, more people have told me it was done before the Civil War than have told me it wasn't. So I tend to believe those people.
All right. Talk with Aaron Fentress, Comcast Sportsnet. Allowing Helf to go out there Sunday and hit the road with his staff for recruiting. I'm thinking of the word. How disturbed are you over how the athletic director handled this?
You know, I had a conversation with Nigel Burke today on his radio show in Portland, and he was assistant coach at Oregon State, defensive coordinator at Nevada, head coach at Portland State. And he was saying how, you know what, that's nothing compared to other things people have gone through. And he said, heck, you know, USC fired their coach on the tarmac.
Right.
And I'm like, yeah, but did that coach go to the national championship game 2 years ago? Did that coach have, you know, first bad season in 12 years? Did that coach include a staff of people who've been in this program for, you know, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30 years? I'm like, no, there's no comparison to me. So I'm really, really stunned and disturbed by that from just a class standpoint. I think that's so disrespectful. Even if 50 on this, why couldn't you just say, we'll talk Tuesday? This is on Sunday. You there?
Yeah, were breaking up a little bit.
Oh, sorry. I'm not sure. Am I okay now?
Yeah, now you're good. Don't move.
So I haven't moved this whole time. I don't know what happened. So you can't tell me that those 2 days of recruiting were so important, but at the same time fire them. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. So if it was done, like a lot of people have told me it was, then I don't see why you do that. And if you were even thinking that it was really close to being a determination you're going to fire them, you could hold off on those 2 days. But the fact that you sent those guys out there and then fired them and brought them back while they were recruiting, and that hurt way more, I would think, than simply not sending them for 2 days if you're going to keep them. So I don't get it. Like I said, maybe it's just something I don't understand, but it doesn't make any sense to me. I thought those guys deserved more. I mean, listen, dude, the Oregon Ducks were for decades just another program out there that wasn't a threat to anybody, and they became a threat, and they became great for a lot of different reasons, and a lot of those reasons are those coaches. Whether anyone wants to admit it or not, if they think it's the money in the facilities, whatever, but the coaches have had a huge part in that. I mean, and you to treat them that way after so many years of service to that university, to me, is just mind-boggling. I don't get it. And I know for a fact from talking to, you know, a couple that they weren't very pleased with being treated like that. So bad luck as far as I'm concerned. But hey, big business, right? Show business, not show friends. That's what they always say.
Now, of the many issues you've brought up in your writing and, you know, on radio shows and TV, you talked specifically about Oregon. You cited Gary Patterson at TCU. And I think you talked about going in cycles and how dangerous it might be after one losing season. I think you said to suddenly just tread into the unknown.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, Mullins talked about, you know, losing some elements of the culture, some, you know, attention to detail and things like that. And, yeah, there were definitely some issues that needed to be ironed out, but this staff has been through that. This staff has ironed out issues before. This staff, you know, these people haven't been – this isn't new to them to have a downswing. So I don't buy for a second that this staff couldn't fix those things and that they deserved at least a chance to do that. You know, that said, if you truly believe that, okay, we need to make a move, change direction, that's fine. But, you know, this next hire now is completely 100% on Mullins and the boosters who are behind this, and they're going to have no one else to blame but them. You know, they were able to blame Elfrich and company this time. Next time, they will be the ones to blame because everyone's going to look at them and be like, hey, wait a minute, you fired that staff that included a bunch of people who went to 2 national championship games and helped produce a Heisman winner for these clowns? So whoever comes in, I better do really well. And that's the thing. The expectations are out of this world. I mean, the expectations are to contend for national championships, you know, every year. And that's the expectation because they did that for like 5 years. But that 5 years, I believe, was just a blink of an eye in history. It's going to be very tough to ever just duplicate that because of all the, you know, the negative things Oregon has to overcome. So if you set that bar and you bring a staff in and they don't meet that bar, then you're probably going to blow them out too. You know, and then you're going to try and get another staff. And then if they don't get it done in 3 or 4 years, you're going to blow them out too. Next thing you know, you're 15 years down the line, you've had 3 or 4 different coaching staffs in. Or you could bring in a coaching staff who could have one big season, and then he bailed, and now you're sent scrambling looking for another coaching staff. So it could unravel. I mean, it could be a 15-year run of 3 to 4 different head coaches, and none of them even come close to reach the national playoffs or even win a Pac-12 title. It's very possible.
Now, one of the things you brought up that I thought was interesting is recruiting. And, of course, we know Chip only recruited Defoe and Mariota. Helfer's recruits were all Voller and Matrell McGraw. Yeah, you actually provided a factual accounting. I want you to kind of elaborate on what you said on Talking Ducks, that the classes that those national championship winners get, be it Ohio State or Alabama, where they rank versus the classes that were actually successful at Oregon.
So I did a bunch of research on this last winter when I sort of wrote sort of a three-part thing on distorted expectations with Oregon.
Right.
And one of the things I pointed out was that if you look at the last 15 national champions, and I actually called up that article last night and looked at it again. I think it was 13 of the 15, their average ranking of their recruiting classes in the 4 years prior to winning it, was under 10. So I think there was two programs that had averages of like 12 or 13 or 14 or something like that. They were all under 10. So that means that your average recruiting class for the 4 years prior was in the top 10. And of those, like, I want to say off the top of my head, it was like of the 15, like 11 had at least one class in the top five. All right. So that's some very heavy duty recruiting there. Now, what Oregon was able to accomplish in going to the national championship twice was amazing, because they went to the national championship with two of the lowest average ranking of recruiting classes of any of the 30 teams. And when I say 30 teams, I mean, I'm counting each Alabama team counts as one team each, you know.
I got you.
Yeah, of anyone. So what they did was completely out of the ordinary. I mean, it was like, I think the first national championship team, that the ranking for that, the average was in the 20s. So it was amazing what they were able to accomplish. But we all know how they did it. Well, they did it with a completely innovative offense that just threw everything into a tizzy. Well, as I've said a million times, other people say it too, that has lost its impact. So, as I wrote last winter, and I've said last year for 3 or 4 years, for Oregon to maintain what they were doing, they have to get into the top 10 in recruiting every year in order to compensate for the fact that they're about to lose their magic with that offense. Not saying they're not going to score points, not saying they're not going to still be exciting, but other teams are doing it too. So the teams used to be 45 to 20. Well, those teams now average 40 points a game. They used to average 20. So now you're going to have closer games. You have closer games, better chance to lose, et cetera, et cetera. So if they can find a coach, and this is where I'll say, bravo, if they can find a coach that can come in here and change the recruiting dynamic and get you into the top 10 every year, then I will say that by all means this move was justified, because I would question whether this staff could do that when it really hasn't done it yet. So I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. We'll see where it goes there. But if they want to contend for national titles, you better raise the level of your recruiting into that top 10, because history has shown if you're not near that top 10 or in that top 10, it's going to be very hard for you to win it all.
You know, the what's next question, we actually talked about this a few weeks back about who the next guy better be. And this is what I think has a lot of people like you and I concerned. Who out there isn't a maybe, but a lock upgrade, and who's accomplished more as a head coach in a power league, not the MAC?
Right. You know what? I think this can go any different direction, number of different directions, and I think Mullins needs to have an open mind. Because you don't want to miss on someone you think is really that next hot thing just because they're only coaching in the MAC right now. I mean, if PJ Fleck is truly a candidate, and you meet with him, and you're like, wow, this guy has it, you don't want to pass on the next Urban Meyer,
right?
Right? You know, so that's up to him and everyone involved to sort of make that assessment. I think. Ideally, fans want, Urban Meyer. just like, with the basketball team, they wanted Tom Izzo,
Yep.
But, let's put it this way. I doubt very seriously they're going to get a guy who has a better resume than Helfrich and company. If they land a coach who has been a head coach for a team that went to the national title and had a Heisman winner and was an offensive coordinator for a team that went to a national title and won 2 Rose Bowls and a Fiesta Bowl, I would be absolutely floored if they could find that guy. So it's going to be interesting. I tend to believe that whoever it is, it's going to be a bit underwhelming in terms of what what fans think. And we all know fans sometimes can be a little over the top in their thinking. But
nah.
doesn't mean it won't be someone who can be very good. I mean, Dana Altman was underwhelming.
Yep.
But he's done a great job. And he's got them. It took a while. But he's got them to a point now where they're holding on to high school recruits and they're getting some high-level high school kids, and they're really building something that could be special and it could be, a Final Four contender this year. So, I think everyone needs to have an open mind now. It's sort of like, okay, what's done is done. Move forward. whoever they bring in, give them a chance. Let's see where it goes.
Now, I want to finish with this because I just love the fact you flat out had the stones to say it about how recruits view Oregon. And I think you said the brothers are not dreaming of coming to Eugene. And, you know, it's kind of funny, but the annual disadvantage, you know, the being a city guy, the best black players in Florida, Ohio, or Texas are not dreaming of coming to Eugene. But how real is that? You know, getting those guys to move 1,500, 2,000 miles as opposed to staying where they are in football hotbeds or going to USC?
Listen, it's a real thing. Now, listen, when I said it, I couldn't believe I said it at the time. They didn't have a wide view, but Jordan Kent and Joey, their faces were like, holy hell, what just happened? And then Jordan was about to cut me off. I looked at him like, don't cut me off. I know what I'm doing. I'm a pro. I'm a vet. I know how to discuss the relationship between race relations and sports. But here's the bottom line, okay? The facility that Oregon got you in the game and the uniform thing got you in the game. But Eugene is what? 99% white?
Maybe.
Okay. So if you're African-American, you live in an area where there's a lot of African Americans. It may be 15, 20, 30, 40, 50%, whatever it is. You're used to seeing people like you around, and then to be asked to go live in an area where you look around and you're like, damn, other than my teammates, how many African Americans are on campus? Not very many. Hell, how many African Americans cover the Ducks? One, me. You know what I'm saying? So that you're asking a lot. Now, some white people really don't want to think about that. Until you say to them, okay, how keen would you be moving right now to a place that's 99% black? Ask a white person that and watch their face. Ask a white person that who lives in a predominantly white area if they would do that and watch their face.
Absolutely.
It'll click, and they'll go, you know what, that's a great point. So that's real. And so the bigger star you are as a recruit, the more options you have. So the more options you have, you can go, I can go to USC. I can go here. I can go there. I can go there. I can go there. Or I can go to Eugene. And then you have the parents. Mom's like, wait a minute. I don't know if I want my African-American son to go to Eugene and it's 99.9% white. You know, because there's a lot of African-Americans out there who have these kids. They're in their 40s. They're my age. They've experienced serious racism in their life. They've seen it up close. And so the idea of sending your kid into what is actually a very nice community, but you don't know for sure, is something that gives people pause. And again, people out there are probably saying, well, the team's mostly black, so clearly people are coming. Well, yeah, they're coming. They're coming. They're getting a scholarship, and Oregon's a great place. But to get over the hump and compete against the other programs out there who have more going for them in that area and have more juice in terms of the Ohio States and Alabamas in terms of history, that's a tough thing to get over. And it's the same thing with Corvallis. And I've talked to some African-American players, former Ducks. I've asked them flat out, did you like Eugene? Hell no. They like the campus. They like the kids. They like going to Oregon. They're not living in Eugene anymore. They're not going back to Eugene. Now, that's some. If you had your choice right now, with the Huskies back, where would you rather live, Seattle or Eugene? And not one person has said Eugene. These are ex-Ducks. They're all like, Seattle, are you kidding me? So that's a real thing. And we'll see if Oregon can overcome that or not. But that's legit.
Well, like I said, I usually watch the show on my exercise bike with a notepad. And I was like, stop. Pause, rewind.
Did he just say that?
Yeah, he did. And I was like, hey, like when it comes from where you were, factual, mathematical, it's like, I thought it was awesome that you said it because it actually matters. So I commend you for that.
Hey, and here's the other thing, too. When I was a kid, I lived in Chicago, then I lived in the Bay Area. So there's obviously a lot of African-Americans around me.
Sure.
And then my mom, for whatever reason, moved to a small little Mormon town in the middle of nowhere in Arizona. And I literally went from a diverse area to I was the only African-American kid inside the city limits. Okay? And it was a culture shock. It was odd. And I had a lot of great friends. I still have great friends in there. But you know what? I experienced a ton of racism as well. So I know from experience how much of a culture shock that can be to you, especially when, you know, in a world when you're dealing with, it's not just being around people who are a different color than you, it's being around people of a different color when you know there is a history of oppression and racism in this country. It can be very uncomfortable for a lot of people. And so it is a real deal. It's not going to destroy the program. It's not going to keep them from, you know, competing. But I'm telling you, that is a tough thing to overcome when you're recruiting kids who have options.
No, I thought it was awesome you brought it up. I thought, you know, I've been on the same page with you for a lot of these takes, and I thought you've been knocking it out of the park for a week, man. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate you sharing, as always. And we'll catch up with, I guess we got to start talking about Blazers and hoops and other stuff next week, or maybe a new coach.
Wait a minute, we got a new coach coming up, then we got new staff guys being signed, then we got recruiting. This is going to be the longest offseason of Oregon football in a long time.
All right. Hey, AF, always a pleasure, man. Have a good one.
All right. Take care.
All right. Take it easy.